This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. The first one in a couple weeks. I hope you guys had a nice, all you Americans, that is, had a very nice 4th of July. I celebrated myself a little bit here. I was in the, you know, I'm in the U.S. right now. I'm on the Warped Tour with so many great bands. I'm making new friends. I'm partying. I'm hanging out. And it really is a great opportunity to talk to a lot of fans of the show. They're coming around saying, "Hey Shane, I dig the podcast," which is very nice to hear. I'm also having so many conversations with various band members, and a lot of these I hope to do them officially, put a lot of them as bonus episodes for the All Access Club, but of course there will be episodes every week, every Monday, in this case Monday night. I'm a little late this week, but it's okay. And this week specifically, we have a band on the Warped Tour. They are killing it. And I gotta say, this has been one of the most requested interviews that I've had. And it's funny because I actually, he reached out to me directly through his management and said, "Hey, I want to do the show." And I was like, "Well, that's perfect, because I've been meaning to ask you for a little while." So this week, we have Brian Garris of Knocked Loose. If you don't know Knocked Loose, you're probably living under a rock, because the hype with this band right now is real. There is no bigger hype band in heavy music. They are killing it every day on the Warped Tour. And what I love about this band so much is how original they really are. They are raw. They are heavy. They really don't give a fuck. And talking to Brian makes it evident that this guy knows about hardcore. This guy knows the history, cares about it, but also just wants to make great music. And speaking with him was definitely all my pleasure. Before we get into that, I want to thank all my sinners worldwide for being a part of the All Access Club. If you're a member, thank you. If you're not a member yet, definitely check it out. The link is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Basically, for as little as $6 a month, you get a whole bunch of bonus content. And it really does help us keep the lights on around here, keep this show going week after week. So I won't preach about it this week. Just check it out. Again, the link is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Also, news with me, we have a brand new Silverstein record coming out this Friday. It is called Dead Reflection. We've already released a bunch of songs, I think 4 songs already. We're selling it at the shows at Warped Tour already. We got the CDs and vinyl, so we're selling it early. So if you are going to a Warped Tour show this week, be sure to stop by our merch tent, say hello, and pick it up. But I'm really proud of this record, and you know, it's pretty well documented, I think, on this podcast, that I've had a bit of a rough year, and this record really was sort of my saving grace. It's a highly personal record for me. It means a lot to me, so be sure to check it out if you have the means, or if you just have Spotify. Give it a listen on Friday. It will be up. Also, as you heard at the beginning of this podcast, I am a part of the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, and there are so many great podcasts you can check out at jabberjawmedia.com. And I want to talk about one specifically this week. I have been a guest of in the past. It's with my good friend Mike Herrera of MXPX. And make sure to tune into Mike Herrera's podcast, The Mike Herrera Hour, where he features and interviews writers, entrepreneurs, and mostly musicians. Listen to him live every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on Adobe Radio. You can also catch the Mike Herrera Hour on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and of course, jabberjawmedia.com. For more information, check out mikeherrera.net. All right, hey, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Knocked Loose frontman Brian Garris.
No face, no face, so why my brothers?
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Shane.
How's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
I'm great, man. We're sitting under the in your hang zone.
Yeah.
On Warped Tour right now, Charlotte, North Carolina. Bunch of drum cases, a bunch of posters, just a bunch of bullshit, really.
Yeah. Don't compare it to Urals.
I mean, you guys have a cinder block holding up your tent. What's going on, man? You guys need a better hang zone.
I think that this is our first tour we've ever done with, like, a wagon or anything. So I think that we're not used to chilling around it. We're always, like, over
there.
In
the venue and
stuff. Watching. Like, I try to watch as many bands as I can. I'm, like, almost never here. I always walk past Ural's hang zone, and it looks like somebody's beautiful back porch.
That's how we roll.
Yeah, it looks so nice over there. And there's definitely been some jealousy, and I've thought about it. The other day, we actually did the thing where you put the cooler underneath the trailer door so you can prop it up like a porch.
We invented that, Brian.
Yeah, you got all kinds of bands.
I know. They all copied us.
Yeah.
But we were the first also to put AstroTurf on our trailer door as well.
Yeah, that's so brilliant.
We're ridiculous. And that's cool, man. So you managed to walk around Warped Tour all day and just watch bands.
Yeah,
even in this heat.
Or I'll sit at our table a lot with our merch guy, because he's my best friend. So I'll just hang out with him or just watch bands.
That's sick, man. Who are some of your faves on this tour?
Obviously Hatebreed.
Yeah, I love Hatebreed.
I've been trying to catch Hatebreed, Sick of It All. And then a lot of the bands that we got to tour with last year are on this tour, so I watch them every day just because they're great friends of ours, like Counterparts, Stick to Your Guns, Acacia Strain. I've caught You All, Hawthorne Heights, because I just recently met them, and they're all very nice guys. And
so you, obviously you're younger than me. How old are you now?
I'm 23. I'll be 24 in September.
Okay, 23. So, growing up, you know, as a punk rock kid, hardcore kid, whatever, did you go to Warped Tour?
Yeah, I think the first time I went to Warped Tour was like 2009.
Okay.
So not too long ago. And then I went again 2010 and then 2013, I think.
And when you were a kid going to Warped Tour, was it like a dream of yours to play or anything like that? Or was,
honestly,
at that point, were you not really a musician yet, or what was going on?
I was a musician, but I never really... I think that just regular touring was my dream, so
yeah.
I hadn't thought far enough to Warped Tour, but I remember when Knocked Loose started to tour, people would always tease us, like, you guys are going to play Warped Tour one day, and I think they kind of put it in my head as a dream. Like,
right.
Last year we went to hang out with some friends of ours that were on the tour, and I got to do, like, a guest vocal part with them, and when I got out on stage, I was like... Like, I felt really good, and I was, like, so nervous, and I was like, man, I would absolutely love to do this. So getting the offer was definitely, like, it was an awesome feeling.
No, that's amazing. It's funny, you know, because the first Warped Tour I went to was in 1997, so 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm 36. And the first band I ever saw was Sick of It All. I walked in the park, and I see the side of the stage. I was like 16. I ran to the stage, and I was Sick of It All playing.
That's
and it's pretty
sick.
Crazy that 20 years later, they're still here on the tour.
Yeah.
And they're still one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
But you know what's kind of funny about that is, like, the first band I ever saw at Warped Tour was a hardcore band, but hardcore wasn't really that big a part of Warped Tour until actually quite recently.
Yeah.
And I think there's, in some ways, with the cool underground hardcore scene, Warped Tour's not cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Was there any, like, maybe we shouldn't do this tour, maybe this isn't, like, what we want to do, how we want to spend our summer, like, maybe there's other tours that could be better for us? Was that ever a thought or a conversation like that for you guys?
We never had that.
No.
Because, like, ever since, like, the beginning of the band, like, hardcore or not, like, whatever people decide to call us, we just wanted to make sure that, like, we're not afraid to play any kind of show. We just want to play cool shows with our friends. So, like, we've done, like, the hardcore thing, the metalcore thing. We've done pop punk tours. We played a rap show a month ago in New York City. Like,
nice.
We'll play anything. So, like, Warped Tour was never something that we would have ever turned down. Because it's too good for our band. Everybody that does it tells us about how much fun it is and about how it's summer camp. And, like, so, like, as soon as we got the offer, it was like, yep, there it is. Let's go.
No, that's sick. And I think it's obvious that you're not burnt out on this. You're not jaded.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
not like the classic hardcore, like too cool for everything guy, which is refreshing
yeah.
for me. Because believe me, people that get up to my age, you know, we're not watching a lot of bands, dude. We're hanging yeah. out there and drinking a lot of beers. And of course, we'll go see our friends and stuff. But like, in terms of, I don't know if I'm just old and tired or what it is, but you know, that youthful exuberance
yeah.
that you have is like a really cool thing.
Yeah, I don't, I hope I never get jaded.
Right.
I mean, I keep telling myself that if I ever stop getting excited about the people I get to meet on tour, then I don't need a tour anymore. Like on this tour, I found myself in so many situations where I'm just like, I can't believe I'm here. Like
yeah.
the other day I was playing board games with Craig from Sick of It All.
Or, really?
Yeah, or the other day I was just like chilling in JT from Hawthorne Heights trailer. Today I'm here talking to you. Like I just get to meet so many people that I've like known about or listened to for so long that like I never want to stop getting excited because of that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, man. And that's an awesome thing. And for me, you know, like I said, 20 years of Warped Tour, I've gone every year or played every year, and I still love it.
Yeah.
You know, but there are times, like, when we get the offer, it's our 7th Warped Tour, we get the offer, we're like, oh, man, can we do this again? Can we
yeah.
do 42 shows or whatever in this kind of heat all summer long? Like, there is a little bit of a, here we go again.
Yeah.
You know.
The heat is definitely hard. I definitely wasn't a, didn't know what I was getting into, especially like when we played Vegas and stuff. Like it was very, very hot.
Have you guys done much like outdoor festival
this
stuff
before?
This is
the first one. Yeah, this yeah. is our first one.
How's that different for you guys? Because, you know, I imagine all your shows have pretty much started out probably in super small, like, I mean, probably like shitty bars, VFW halls,
yeah.
house shows.
Exactly.
Wherever you could play. Now all of a sudden it's like you're on this elevated stage. It's not dark.
Yeah.
The sun's shining on you. It's like a completely different environment. Does that take some getting used to for you guys? Are you still getting used to it?
I'm still not used to playing with a barricade.
Right.
Because like we just started doing like the bigger support tours within last year. So we would show up to a venue and you wouldn't know if there'd be a barricade or not. And obviously, being on Warped, there's a barricade every day, so like,
yeah.
that's still kind of hard to get used to. I just got to make sure that I'm being entertaining enough without the crowd interaction.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I'm a lazy guy. I rely on the crowd interaction. If I see kids singing, I'm like, yeah, you can do it for me, and I'll just give it to them. So I think that's been the hardest part. And then just like the sunburn. I think my nose has been sunburnt since the tour started.
It's getting a little freckly. I yeah. can see it. Yeah, man. It really is different with the barricade when you come from that world. I mean, you know, there's the Joel from Being as an Ocean method, which is just go in the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're be one with the crowd. Is that something you ever do?
I get on the barricade a lot, but I don't think I'm actually allowed to go over. Because we're on the Full Sail stage.
Really?
Yeah, and they're all, I don't know, I feel like they kind of panic when we play because we're like the only heavy band over there, and we typically get like a pretty good amount of kids over there to watch
yeah.
us, so I feel like all the staff is kind of freaking out, like they're afraid everything's about to break, so they, I don't think they want me going over into the crowd. Cause I,
but you say you don't think, like did anyone ever say to you you can't go in the crowd?
Nobody like, has yet, but every time I go down onto the barricade I got like 10 people holding me to make sure I'm not about to fall over or get pulled into the crowd.
Break some rules. Come on, Brian. Get crazy, man. No. So, I love your band. Love the energy you guys have. Love the whole thing. And my favorite thing about you guys, if I'm just being honest, is, and I think it goes a little bit with what we talked about with the youthful exuberance, is there's some rawness to your band.
Yeah.
It's like, it seems like it's just five kids that are trying to make heavy music and get out some aggression and frustration, but you don't really care about, like you said, what people are going to label you.
Yeah.
You're just trying to make heavy songs and good songs and have a super high energy show. But the rawness you guys have, I don't think that that is something that you can talk about.
Yeah.
I think that's just something that exists. Do you know what I'm talking about when I say that?
I definitely understand what you're saying. And I'm glad that you feel that way. I think that when we started the band and recorded, like, our first release, we, like, didn't have a drummer. And we only had one guitar player. So we recorded at our guitar player's house, and he just programmed the drums. So I think that we were so eager to get the music out there that we just focused on the live show.
Yeah.
Like, once we finally had a band, we were like, the music's already out there, and now we got to make sure that we bring it when we play. You know what I mean? So it's always kind of been like a live show first kind of thing, which I'm glad that we all just like kind of, it's like an unspoken agreement between all of us. Even when we recorded our album, we ended up recording it live.
Really? With Will Putney?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So like, it was definitely weird for us because like our drummer used to play to a metronome when we would play live and everything. And when we went to record with Will, he was like, let's ditch it. Like, let's just do it live. No metronome.
Really? That's wild. That's unheard of.
Yeah, so
maybe that's what I'm hearing then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because for me, like, records these days are so, like, for lack of a better word, like, square. You know? Everything is put to, you know, metronome, like you said, click track. Things are quantized. Everything sounds perfect. And there's that rawness that I guess you guys have. I guess that's what it comes from.
Yeah. We didn't do scratch tracks. We had our guitar players and bass in the room playing in the headphones that our drummer was listening to while he was recording the drums. So he was just recording to whatever they were playing at the same time. Like, it was, I really, really liked the way that we did it. I mean, it came out a lot faster because he didn't have that click to slow him down, but I kind of like that. I like that our music is faster. If we're going to be as heavy as we are, I would prefer not to be, like, super slow and drug out.
Especially when you start playing live, because live, the tendency is to play faster anyways.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have it be like, oh, like, they play their songs too fast, like, live, and it's not as heavy or something.
Yeah.
Like, so it's probably better to set... Like, we always say when we're making records, we're always like, all right, here's a tempo, here's what we think it should be, then we'll bump it up by, like, 3.
Yeah.
You know, and then... But, of course,
how you'll
like,
play
not
live.
Using a click track these days is, like, very, very rare. Especially with a big producer like Will.
Yeah. I was nervous about it at first, but I think that it turned out great. And he hasn't used a click track since. Like, even when we played live now, like, no click, and it just seems more organic, like... I mean, we mess up every now and then, but it's real. Like, we just want, I don't know, as long as we look cool messing up to the kids that paid to watch us.
Just mess up the same part every time, and that's just the way the song goes, man.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your early life. I mean, you're only 23. It wasn't that long ago. You can probably remember it pretty well. Oldham County... Kentucky.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Louisville has a rich hardcore scene history. I've never heard of Oldham County. I thought you guys said Orange County on stage. I was like, oh, I thought they were from Kentucky. Why are they from California?
No.
So I'm probably not alone there, people hearing that. But what was it like growing up there?
As far as the music scene,
no, no, no. What was it like growing up for you?
Oh, I mean, it's very chill. Like, people, I've had a ton of kids ask me if it's scary because of the way the music that we play. They're like, oh, it must be scary because their music is scary and they rep it so hard. But, like, it's not at all. It's just, like, woods. It's a bunch of woods and neighborhoods and public schools. And it was fine. I mean, I had, like, my close group of friends. And I wouldn't say that, like, it was hard or that it was easy. You know what I mean? It was just, I had a fairly
normal
childhood.
To you.
Yeah.
So did you have a standard, I shouldn't say that. Did you have sort of a classic family structure, nuclear family? Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two younger brothers. One's name is Dallas, he's 16 now. One is Trey, he's 14. My mom and dad still together. Both of my little brothers are into the same kind of music.
Right.
They're basically just like me, just clones of me. My younger brother Dallas has actually sang in bands before.
Really?
Yeah.
And he's only 16.
Yeah, he started a band called Street Rat when he was like 14, and we started putting him on all kinds of shows, and like started getting him, like, helping him print merch and stuff. And, like, the bass player for his band is somebody I actually graduated high school with. So it's, like, somebody my age. But Dallas was just super young.
So, obviously, like, getting into music, the music side of things, was there music, like, played in your household? Did your family, did your parents, like, sing or play music in the house or play guitar or anything?
My grandpa on my mom's side, my pop, he played bass my whole life, basically his whole life, and the saxophone. Okay. But bass was, like, his main thing. It's what he actually, like, excelled in. He was in a bunch of bands. He got to tour Europe. He got to do a lot through music, and I always looked up to him because of it. My grandma on my dad's side was actually a country singer. She used to play shows I used to go to when I was younger. My uncle on my dad's side was a drummer. My cousin on my mom's side, guitar. Like,
wow.
I've got it all throughout my family. It's all, everybody in my family has always just been so passionate about music that I wanted to play guitar at first, and I tried, and I just wasn't that good at it, and I gave up real easy, and then I just started yelling, kind of as a joke.
Really?
Yeah, like, I was just kind of making fun of a band. Not making fun of them as in I didn't like them. I was just, like, mocking them.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, that's kind of tight. And I just ran with it.
And you just could kind of scream right away when you tried? It came out of your body?
No, I definitely couldn't, but I could more than any of my friends that were trying. So, like, one of my friends was in a band, and we were all goofing off, and I was, like, yelling or whatever, and he was like, that's tight. Like, you should be in my band. And I was just like, okay, yeah, for sure. And, like, then I just, like, I don't know, the excitement of being in a new in your first band, I just fell in love with it. And back then, I tried to do, like, all the, like, fancy, like, lows and highs and, like, all the crazy stuff. And then one day I just was like, yeah, I can't really do that at all, so I'm just going to start yelling at the top of my lungs. And, like, that's just what I do now.
Right. And do you ever sing? You clean singing? Have you tried that? Is that something
I can't at all. Yeah, I have, like, a terrible voice.
It's funny how some guys, you never know in hardcore, right? Like, guys are just screamers, and they never sing. Doesn't mean they can't. Like, you ever heard Brendan from Counterparts sing?
Barely.
He's pretty good.
Yeah,
man.
He tries to, like, sneak it in, but he's so good.
He's really good. Like, they played a set one time in Toronto where they did an entire cover set of The Used, and that's he sang sick. All the songs, and he ripped. And yeah. I was like, where the hell's that come from?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I always wonder about that. But how did you... I've never asked anybody this, but I'm wondering, how did you, like, practice as a screamer? Was it just... Were you just doing it when you were in a band practice environment? Or is our tent going to blow away? Is that cinder block got it?
I think it's got it. I hope it's got it.
If the tent blows away, we could be... You don't want to hold that the whole time.
Not the whole time, but when the wind starts picking up, I'll grab a hold of it.
The other thing we used to do is, like, zip tie a dolly, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Or a road case, whatever, to it.
But
damn,
as
yeah,
you're
hopefully
saying,
the tent doesn't blow away. We'll have half the interview will be us chasing down a tent flying. Hopefully not smashing into a bus. Anyways, Manny, sorry. How did you practice your screaming? Because that's something, like, it's really funny to think of somebody, like, in their bedroom.
Yeah.
Like, singing in their bedroom, sure, but, like...
Screaming,
like,
yeah.
Like, practicing your death metal growl or whatever in your bedroom. Did you have a way you practiced? When I,
like, started and I was, like, super young and lived with my parents, like, yeah, I just screamed in my bedroom. Like, I just, like, played my radio as loud as I could go, and I would just scream along with songs. And then, like, when I remember, like, when my old band would play shows, like, on the... This is actually really funny, but... On the way to the show, I would scream E-Muir in my car to warm up. I would just put on E-Muir's first record and just scream it while somebody was driving me, just, like, in the passenger seat. So, like, I'm sure anybody driving by thought that I was insane.
That's so funny.
But like, I don't practice at all. Like, I probably should. Like, in between tours, I should probably do something to, like, keep my voice, like, regular, because I mean, when we started this tour, we took, like, a little bit of time off before this tour, so it had been a while since I had done vocals. So, like, right after the first day, my voice was just shot.
Yeah.
It was completely gone.
Totally. I mean, that's always what happens with tours. Like, the first week is the first week is the hardest.
Yeah.
First few days are hard, and then something happens. It's like a muscle, I guess, right? And then you're fine. But yeah, it's the same with me too. Like, when we don't tour for a while, like, I'll like start warming up before the show a little bit. I don't really scream when I warm up. I just kind of sing. And then usually the first song is, first line is screaming, and I'm like, I haven't screamed in like 2 months. Here it is. Ah! And it's usually like atrocious. I sound like a pterodactyl or something.
Yeah. I don't really warm up. I'll usually just like, I'll sneak off to the green room and I'll scream once, and it'll kind of let me know how the show's about to go.
Yeah. Like, the little test, the test run.
We played a show the other day in Durham, North Carolina. It was like an off day show, and we had a bunch of bands that are on the tour played, and there was like this like pop punk band in the green room, and I just walked in and was like, hey guys, this is about to be really awkward. And then I just screamed at the top of my lungs, and they all just looked at me like I was crazy, and I was like, all right, I'm warmed up. And I went outside and played.
So funny. So like, obviously we're talking about you screaming in your bedroom. I mean, nobody just hears, you know, your relatives playing country music and playing whatever, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'm going to be a screamer. So where did you start getting into like hardcore and heavy music and stuff that allowed you to want to do that?
It was like 7th grade. I think actually my aunt helped like bridge the gap. She started showing me like, you're like Korn and Metallica and Slipknot and you're like entry level metal bands. And from then on out, it was just like my own hunger that really like fueled the fire. Like, back then I had like Headbangers Ball, and I would watch it every single Saturday, and with a notebook, and I would write down the bands that I liked. And we had like dial up internet, so it took like a week to download a song. But I would go to iTunes and download like one song, and I just started doing it that way. And then I started actually buying CDs because I was just sick of waiting for my computer. And I remember like the first CD I ever bought with my own money was Misfits' Greatest Hits CD. And I bought it solely because I thought the artwork was cool. And it said it had a poster inside. So I was like, yeah, I want a poster for my room, so I'm going to buy this CD. And then...
That's amazing.
Under Oath. An Under Oath record as well.
Is there any, obviously being from Louisville, there must be like a big Christian community. Was that a part of your life at all, religion? You say Under Oath, you know, I know a lot of kids got into Under Oath because they were Christian.
I know my grandmother's very religious, and she used to take me and my brothers to church, and religion isn't something that I'm like against at all. Like, I do believe in God. I've actually never talked about religion in an interview, but I believe in God. I just don't know if I would say I like follow any specific religion. I did for a while, but then I felt like it was just because that's how I was raised. Like, I was raised to believe that that's what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
So I kind of just like stepped back and like took a break from it and kind of rediscovered it for myself, if that makes sense. Like,
I think so. Yeah.
I found God on my own terms, to the point where it was just like undeniable for me personally, and I kind of left it at that. Like, I never like really followed like any specific religion. I just know that I believe in God, and I don't think anything will change that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I think it's a journey in life a lot of people take. You know, I don't think you have to be a certain age and be like, this is what I think, this is what I believe, this is what I'm always going to believe. I think it's okay to, you know, as you have more experience with things, as you go into more and more places, see the world, I think a lot of times people's feelings change about it, and I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. I definitely have had some like personal struggles about it, and I've like talked about it in our music, but I think when it comes to the actual like argument of like if God exists or not, I definitely believe in him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. Well, so back to hardcore. I gotta ask you. Okay, so I went over and I saw you guys playing, and you were wearing an Integrity shirt, and I was like, "Oh man, like that's crazy."
Yeah.
Then I saw you in catering, and you're wearing a By the Grace of God shirt, and I'm like, "So you're like, what are you mail ordering Victory Records merch? Is that what's happening?"
Yeah, I'm on all the groups. I'm on eBay. Like, I'm just constantly looking for older shirts. I don't know. I like to do my research when it comes to hardcore.
Well, I respect that.
Yeah, so I definitely, like, try to collect t-shirts.
It's cool, and I was surprised, you know, for somebody that's 23, and I feel like your generation, you know, the history of music and how we got here is sort of a dying art.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you talk about the Misfits. That was what happened to me. Like, back, you know, I guess it was similar to you. I didn't have, there was no internet really to get music when I was a kid. So I would hear about something in a magazine, and I'd hear some of the bands I liked, like Bad Religion or Rancid or whatever, talk about like the Misfits or talk about Minor Threat or whatever. Yeah, and then I'd go and I'd buy those records because I wanted to know where the music came from. So I thought that that was a cool thing. I'm like, oh my God, by the grace of God, like I have not thought about that band in a minute. You know?
I had to do that because they're from my hometown.
Are they really?
Yeah, they're from Louisville, Kentucky. Yeah, so
I didn't know that they were.
Yeah, so Oldham County is just like 20 minutes outside of Louisville.
Yeah.
So like my address is Louisville, Kentucky. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I actually recently became friends with the drummer, by the grace of God, because he's in a new band called Miracle Drug. And it's like a super group. It's the drummer for By the Grace of God, the guitar player for Mouthpiece, the bass player for Supertouch, and the singer from CR, which is like the Staten Island band. And they're all just like really, really nice guys that all live in Louisville now and have like real jobs and real families and wanted to start a hardcore band just to play some shows locally. And they're like the nicest people. And I met Tommy, who played drums for By the Grace of God. And on the back of that shirt that I have, it's like a picture of like a fake contract, and it's basically like them signing their life away to Victory Records type thing. And it's got a hand signing a name, and it's actually Tommy's hand.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So he was like, that's my hand. Like, that's Tommy Edge on the bottom of that like signature. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, I think it's important to do research. Like, I think that it's the coolest thing ever. Like, finding somebody that has just put so much time into hardcore and just like getting to pick their brain. We toured with Stick to Your Guns, and their guitar player, Chris, played in Walls of Jericho.
I know. We toured with Walls of Jericho back in 2004.
Yeah, so, like, I would
Windsor,
just...
Windsor, Ontario, represent. He's my boy.
I would just punish Chris about old stories, like, about them touring with Earth Crisis and, like, all the crazy things they got to do and all the, like, all the things that they had to overcome with having, like, a female singing for the band in that time period when it, like, wasn't common whatsoever.
Were like pretty much the only one, but a lot of, you know, hardcore's macho, you know, a lot of it is, especially at that time, you know, there was like, I had John Joseph from Cro-Mags on an episode, and you know, we talked a little bit about this, how it was macho, nihilistic, like people didn't give a shit. A lot of people didn't like the fact that they had a female singer doing that, you know, it was I would love to have Chris on or, talk to him about that, maybe for a bonus episode or something. But
yeah.
But how did you get, like, you know, we're talking about watching Headbangers Ball, and now we're talking about By the Grace of God and Walls of Jericho. Where did you start going to shows?
I started going to shows. It probably right after I started listening to heavy music. I just started. My mom took me to a show because she wouldn't let me go by myself. So Oldham County doesn't have a music scene. It was just Louisville,
right? I understand. It's
but
like a suburb,
Oldham County had a venue when I was in middle school called Twice Told, and they would have punk shows every weekend.
Oh, yeah?
So me being, like, new to this music, I would see these punks that would, like, ride my bus with, like, these giant mohawks, and they always had their skateboards to school, and I was like, I gotta go. And my mom just wouldn't let me. Like, she was like, no, like, they look weird, and, like, and I was kidding. My mom's not judgmental at all, but, like, me being young, like, she was nervous about me diving into that world. So finally she took me to my first show, and it like wasn't a punk show. It was Suicide Silence.
How old were you?
I was probably 14.
Okay.
13, 14. And my mom like snuck her way. Have you ever played Headliners Music Hall in Louisville, Kentucky? Yeah. So you know how the green room is just that balcony upstairs?
Yep, exactly.
My mom snuck her way onto the balcony because I mean, she had no place in the crowd. And she ended up hanging out with a tour package the whole time. Like, yep, that's my son down there. Like, so they all like knew who I was, and it was sick. And then she took me once, and she was like, "Yeah, you can start going by yourself. Like, this isn't crazy. You know what I mean?" Like,
I'm sure like her hanging out with the guys on tour and realizing they're just like nice, normal guys.
Yeah.
They're not like, you know, because if you're not surrounded by that, you know, you read Motley Crue's The Dirt and you think that's like what's going on.
Yeah.
You know? So that probably was a big thing. She's like, exactly. Oh, yeah, it's cool.
And then I just started going to all of them and I started. So, like, Louisville hardcore is like its own thing when it comes to like Louisville shows. You've got like the bigger like headliner shows and then you've got Louisville hardcore, you know what I mean? So I kind of found that when I was like leaving high school and started going to like strictly hardcore shows instead of like metal shows, and I was just instantly hooked. And that's when it started being about like all about hardcore and like the history of hardcore. And like, because when in Louisville, like all the people older than us or that was there before us, like when we started coming around, it wasn't like, oh, you're a new kid, like you don't know what you're talking about. Like they were never like that. They were like, oh, like if you had fun at this show, like here's a flyer for this one, and if you need a ride, I'll come pick you up and take you.
Cool.
Or it was like, oh, I like that shirt, you should check out these five bands that sound like that band. And I'm very grateful for, like, I'm still friends with those guys. Like, they still go to hardcore shows, and they're responsible for, like, why I love hardcore and why I'm obsessed with the history, because they were always like, oh, you like this new band, here's who influenced them.
Are you bummed out you never got to go to Crazy Fest?
Yes. Yeah. But at the same time,
I never went either.
But at the same time, the last year Crazy Fest happened, Disembodied dropped day of, so I feel like I would have been more upset if I went and didn't get to see Disembodied.
Right. Right. No, that's funny. No, my friend Andy Tinsley. Do you know Andy Tinsley?
I don't think so.
He's from Louisville, and I think he used to put on Crazy Fest or was one of the organizers, and he's now the front house tour manager of Deftones.
Oh, sick.
So, and he used to work with From Arm to Ashes back in the day. That's how I know him, and a bunch of bands.
I know Chuck, the merch guy for Warped, said that he worked on Crazy Fest.
I'm sure. Chuck, I mean, you should talk to hardcore about you should talk about hardcore with Chuck.
We have
that
a little
guy knows
bit,
everything
but we
too.
Haven't gotten to really dive into it.
Yeah, man. So we got to talk about Knocked Loose. Obviously, you guys have a lot of hype right now. I don't know how aware you are of it, being, you know, on the inside looking out. Sometimes you don't hear what people are saying, but, you know, you guys probably see you're pulling big crowds over there. A lot of people are talking about it. Did you ever think this was going to happen, and how are you interpreting all this, like the success?
I definitely didn't think that it was going to happen, but I feel like it did happen really fast. So it's kind of like, I don't know, I just had to take a step back and be like, everything that I've always wanted is slowly but surely starting to happen. And it's just like, it's such a great feeling that it's just one of those feelings where I feel like I can't say thank you enough. Like,
right.
Thank you to the people that come to see us, to Kevin Lyman, to the people involved in our, like, that helped putting out our record. Like, just everybody that has ever had a hand getting us where we are. Like, it's just like, I never would have pictured it.
Right.
And it's insane. Like we only have one record out.
Right. Yeah.
And it just did so much better than any of us would have pictured, that we're all like terrified to write another record.
That was literally my next question.
Yeah.
It's a well documented thing we talk about on this show, is that no band in the history of music, especially punk rock, has ever put out a bad second record and lived to tell the tale.
Yeah.
Can you think of one? Can you think about a bad second? Like, every band that put out a bad second record pretty much ended up, like, fading away. There's so many cases of it. So, yeah, it's been, I mean, the record came out, what, over a year ago now?
This time last year, so...
Okay, so a year ago, it's got to be getting to be time to start thinking about writing.
Yeah.
What's the plan there? What are you guys going to do?
I mean, we're going to do the same thing we always do and just, like, get in a room and write. You know what I mean? Like, we've definitely talked about, like, directions that we wanted to go with it and things that we wanted to maybe, like, touch up on. It's been... We're all very, like... we listened to our band. You know what I mean? Like, when we got the record done, we listened to our record so many times that it's just embedded in our brain.
So you're fans of your own band. That's good.
And but at the same time, we know what we want to do differently next time. You know what I mean?
And what is that?
I don't know. Like, for one, I want it to be heavier, which I know sounds crazy because everybody looks at us like we're so heavy, but I think that we can be heavier without sacrificing our sound. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then a lot of people, I don't know, a lot of people compare us to like those like old like metalcore bands like Disembodied and like Martyr AD and like stuff like that just because we have those like panic chords. And I like that. I like that comparison. That's the kind of stuff that like I listened to when I was that age. But I would like to dive a little bit more into that, like the weirder aspect of it. Bands like Botch, Cave In, like,
really,
I feel like that's because a lot of bands are
doing more technical stuff.
A lot of the bands are doing more of the Martyr AD thing. Like, it's like coming back around like full circle, and I think that it's sick. I can listen to it all day, but like I haven't really heard anybody tap into like the weirder side of things. But who knows? Like, we're very big about like just not forcing anything. Like we just get into a room and whatever happens, happens.
No, definitely, man.
I am excited. I'm just nervous.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be. Yeah, it really is gonna be make or break.
Yeah,
like, you know, and I mean, and I don't mean to scare you.
Yeah, yeah.
But that pressure you're gonna feel. It's real pressure.
Yeah.
You know, because if the record comes out and it's going to be one of these classic hardcore records or classic heavy records,
yeah,
you guys are going to be doing this for a very long time. And if it flops, everyone says Laugh Tracks was way better. Yeah. Everyone's saying, "Oh, what happened?" Then you know it's going to be like, okay, you're going to have to kind of be building this thing slowly. But are you scared of getting too big?
I don't know. I haven't really like. I've always set small goals for myself instead of big goals. So it was like, my goal was to start a band, then my goal was to tour, and my goal was to get signed. You know what I mean? I never started a band and was like, I'm going to tour the world. You know what I mean? It was like, after I'd already toured the States, it was like, okay, now my goal is Europe. Okay, now my goal is this. You know what I mean? So like, right now, my goal is Japan. Like, I want to go to Japan really, really bad.
Yeah.
And then like, if we get bigger, like, I'm going to welcome it with open arms. Like, it'd be sick. You know what I mean? Like, that's the goal. That's why we tour as much as we do, to play in front of new faces. And like, hopefully when it comes time to like headline our own tour, all those people come out and watch us. So like, we'll see how it goes.
Are you going to do a headline tour?
Yeah. We haven't done a headliner off of Laugh Tracks yet. But we're talking about one.
I think I heard about one, but I won't spill the beans.
Yeah, please don't, because it's very early in the workshop stage.
Right. No.
We can talk about it off record.
Sure. Of course we will. But no, I'm stoked for that, and I'm stoked for you guys becoming that band. So you guys have never done any headline tours ever?
We have, like, back when we were just touring off our demo. We toured like 10 months out of the year. Like, it was just like, as soon as we got our own band, we just hit the road. And we would have flyers on the walls at venues for our next tour while we were on a tour. Like, hey, if you like us, we'll be back in 10 days on a different tour. Like, and right. We would just find bands on the road and be like, do you want to go out? Like, we'll book it. Like, we'll get it going. And we did that for like a year and a half before we finally met Pure Noise. And then...
How did you book those shows?
We had a friend named Travis Porter who, like, he still books tours. He booked for us... He was friends with the band that we toured with.
Not Travis Porter from Toronto.
Not Travis Porter from Toronto. But he booked our first tour ever because he was friends with the band we were on tour with. And then he was like, you guys are sick. Like, do you need help? And we were like, yes, just put us on the road as much as you can. And he did, and he helped us a tremendous amount.
Cool.
He's still booking tours and still working really hard. So that's always just kind of been our thing, is to just be on the road as much as possible.
Are you, is there a concern about headlining finally? Like, you got to play a longer set. You know what I mean? You have to do this sort of like putting on a show. Cause you know, like when people come to see your band now, sure, they're coming to see you, but they're also probably going to stick around for, I know you guys supported like Every Time I Die or Sick to Your Guns or like those bands that are veterans. are going to put on a great show. They're going to give the kids their money's worth.
Yeah.
But now when that's you, there's a pressure there to be the ones that give the kids their money's worth. Is there any concern there for you?
There's definitely
especially
a pressure.
Being a front man?
There's definitely a pressure being like, I don't know, having a hand in the bands that play before us and being like, really, I have to play after them.
Right.
Like, these are my friends and they're, or like, this band is so good and we're supposed to follow them every night kind
sure,
of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think that there's a lot of pressure there, and it's just like, like you said, like, just a whole year of support tours with Every Time I Die, and like, I've been seeing Every Time I Die since I was allowed to go to shows, so I knew that those people were there for them. Like, granted, we would have great sets, but I was like, yeah, this is still an Every Time I Die show, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm anxious to see how it goes, but at the same time, like, I think it's going to be fun. I think we'll probably do, like, smaller rooms and just make it as crazy as we can.
Awesome, man. I think that's a good idea. You know, don't bite off more than you can chew.
Yeah.
So when can people expect to hear some new Knock Loose music? Do you have any idea?
We're shooting for first half of next year.
Okay.
That's like the goal right now. Like, we started writing in our little gap in between our last tour and this tour. And we're going to continue to write when we get home. So sure. We'll see how it goes. Like I said, we're not going to force anything, but if everything falls into place, we're going to get it out as soon as we can.
Sounds awesome, man. Trying to think what else. What else should we say? Oh, I know what I can ask you. So you mentioned you want to go to Japan really bad. What other places have you got to go to so far? And like, being kids from... what is it again?
Oldham County. Yeah.
Was there any culture shock kind of seeing that, or had you traveled yourself before the band got going?
So I had never left Kentucky before I started touring. Like, I have relatives who live in Indiana, but like, that doesn't really count because it's like 2 hours away.
Yeah.
But like, the first time I ever saw the beach, like, I was in a van. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so we got to do Europe last winter with Counterparts and Expire. And it was 100% a culture shock. I went to Europe actually right before the tour to visit my girlfriend because she went to school there for like 6 months. She did a semester abroad.
Wow.
So I actually had like money saved up, and like, I was like, I'm going to go visit you before we tour there. So like, I kind of already like, no, I get the culture shock over with. But I mean, it was awesome.
You can, like, tell your other guys in your band, like, okay, you got to go here. Yeah, you don't,
like,
go here.
Here's how the metro works. Like, right, you know, right, what I right. mean? Because there is like no public transportation in Kentucky. So like, in Louisville at least. So I'm like teaching them how to use like the subway system in Germany or something. But I fell in love. Like, I really, really like Europe. I feel like people, when they tour Europe, they either love it or hate it. But I loved it. Like, I immediately fell in love with, like, the culture and the history. And, like, I would wake up really, really early every day. And I'd make some coffee on the bus. And then I would just go walking around whatever city we were in. And, like, and then in January, we got to go to Australia.
Yeah.
And I love Australia. It's, like, the prettiest place. It was their summer, so we just went swimming and cliff jumping every day. We got to go with Sick to Your Guns, so like, they had obviously been there and knew where to go. We had Mods as our TM. I don't know if you know Mods.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Everybody does. He's the best, and he took us to all the sickest spots. And I fell in love. Like, I would move to Australia. It was so sick.
I know. I love Australia, too. Whenever people ask, and I'm sure you get the question... it's kind of like a cliche interview question. It's like, oh, where's your favorite place to tour? My answer is almost always Australia.
Yeah, but we haven't done Japan yet. So right now it's Australia. But I've always wanted to go to Japan. I'm looking forward to the day that comes around.
Were you surprised when you went to these places and you were so far away from home that people knew your songs and knew your words?
Oh,
wasn't
yeah.
Isn't that a weird feeling?
Yeah, it was the craziest thing, especially being in countries that like, English isn't their first language. It was the craziest thing. Like, I remember, like, our first show of our European tour was in the Czech Republic. It was in Prague.
Yeah.
And we played our set, and I just, like, went back to the bus and called my mom and was like, it went so well. Like, I was like, I can't believe it. Like, I truly can't believe it. I thought it was just going to be, like, our first time touring the U.S. kind of thing. You know what I mean? But no, like, people are coming up to me in, like, very, very broken English trying to tell me, like, how much they enjoy our music. And I was just like, there's no way. Like, I could just sit there and listen to them talk forever. And then, of course, you get, like, the funny, like, German backhanded compliments of, like... yeah,
the review, we call it.
Yeah, yeah. that everybody warned us about.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was great.
Dude, what did they say to you? It was your first time there. What did they say?
Well, we didn't get it that bad. The funniest thing that they said to us was, he was like, I find your band 2 weeks past. Please don't break up. And I was like, okay, man, we won't. But I remember, like, Expire, we played Austria. And apparently Expire just never did well in Austria. And it was their last European tour because they just recently broke up. And the promoter went up to their drummer and was like, weird you break up when you finally sell ticket to Austria. And he was like, yeah, I guess so. Like, I don't know what you want me to say.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah. No, we always hear the, pretty good show last time, much better.
Yeah.
It's like, all right.
Well, we're going for our second time in the fall.
Yeah.
So we'll see if we get any of that.
Yep. No, you'll definitely get that one. Well, dude, thank you, man. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for talking to me today. Any Warped Tour stops you're looking forward to specifically, or just all of them?
Boston. I've heard Boston is always huge.
Yeah, it's a good one. They do it. The setup's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think they might put your stage in this, like, foresty kind of area.
Yeah.
It's real nice there. And
then Texas.
Boston hardcore, man.
I love Texas, so I'm looking forward to that, too. It's going to be hot, but it's going to be good.
Definitely, man. Well, dude, hey, thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you very much. This was great.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, thank you.
There it is with Brian. What a sweet dude. Just such a nice guy. And it's really cool, you know, to see a guy that's younger than me, of a different generation, still caring about the history of hardcore music. And like I said before, I think it's a bit of a lost art these days. I think gone are the days when, you know, you had to go into your local record store and, like, kind of, hey, I've heard of this band. I've heard of Crass. I've heard of Sex Pistols. I've heard of Minor Threat. I don't know. I'm just going to throw down my $20 and, like, hope the record's good. And believe me, I bought a lot of punk hardcore records when I was a kid that really weren't that great. But I, you know, I still have them. And some of them I went back and checked out, and they did grow on me over time. But these days, man, you guys, your younger generation, if you're listening to this and you don't remember those days, it's really easy for you to go back and check out some great hardcore and punk rock bands that shaped what you listen to today. So be sure to do that. That's my little old man knowledge for you there, right there. Anyways, hey, that was this week's episode. Be sure to tune in next Monday for another great episode. I'm very excited about the one next week. Make sure you're subscribed. And of course, check out the All Access Club. The link again is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. I will leave you with a tune. This is, oh yeah, this is going to get you in the zone. Make sure you turn it up super, super loud, kind of like pump up yourself, because this is quite a tune. Here it is, Knock Loose with Dead Ringer on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love, and we will see you next week.